Good morning, everyone. So if you haven't already got the handouts, there are four different reports. I'm not trying to kill you by death by paperwork, but I'm going to be walking through some of them, and they have some good tools and resources that you can able to walk away with today. So there are four different reports. They don't just all look the same in the back. But as Gretchen said, I'm Samantha Morgan, and I work at NATRO. I'm giving this presentation on behalf of myself and a former colleague, Jennifer Narotko, who worked on this project as well when she was under contract with NATRO. I'm actually like to start off and kind of with a little hypothetical story. So imagine you're in your community and you're having a SARS-like outbreak. Cases of sick folks are popping up all over the place. Your health department or agency quickly becomes overwhelmed, not enough staff, not enough resources, and not enough financial support really to help with any of that. Your state health agency has informed you that a federal partner has come forward and is going to appropriate you some funds, but you find out that there is statute in your jurisdiction that you're unable to accept those funds due to your local board of health has to physically meet to be able to accept any funds that weren't previously approved in that fiscal year budget. That's just to set the stage, because if that was your community, you'd have the funds, but you couldn't hire additional staff. You have the funds, but you can't buy vaccine, you can't buy prophylaxis, you can't buy PPE for your staff. And those are kind of some of the barriers that kind of state and local health departments have faced. Quickly, no relationships to disclose. It's going to be a kind of a fast presentation. I have a lot to cover in four reports, so just bear with me. I'll be happy to answer any questions that you all have afterwards. I want to be able to define the term administrative preparedness for you all, help you understand some of those challenges I just stated, and then kind of give you some tools and strategies that you can walk away with and really start to implement as soon as you get back to whether you work at a health department, a university, or another type of organization. How many of you, by show of hands, are familiar with the term administrative preparedness? Have you heard of it? Okay, good. A few. So, all right. Well, it's a fairly new term. Here's the official definition. It kind of is a result of H1N1, really. A lot of, as many of you are probably aware, Congress appropriated funds through CDC down to states and locals. To help respond to the H1N1 pandemic. A lot of states and locals had long contracting delays, unable to hire staff due to those types of things, different statutes, a lot of different barriers I'm going to go through later. But as a result, a working group was formed between NATRO, ASTO, ASPR, so Assistant Secretary for Preparedness and Response under HHS, and CDC, to come together and really define the definition and kind of frame our efforts moving forward. And really, the point of definition is really to have processes or policies in place that can be accelerated, streamlined, or modified during an emergency. So here are some of the challenges that most organizations face. While the working group focused specifically on governmental public health, I think that you all probably can relate to these types of challenges within your organization. Hiring freezes, collective bargaining restrictions, so you can't have certain employees work overtime, lengthy contract approval times. Some health departments have told us that it can be anywhere from 2 to 6 months to get a contract through your process. Competitive bidding requirements, having to have 3 different bids before you can move forward with a contract. Time requirements for posting jobs have to be up for 30 days at some point. And a lot of duplicative reporting requirements coming from all different areas. And, you know, we all face those. NATRO faces those even with our, day-to-day. And, you know, they're in place. A lot of these requirements are in place to have some fairness and accountability when it comes to a lot of our administrative processes. But the problem is during an emergency, you don't have those times. You don't have 30 days to post a position opening. So that's really where administrative preparedness is helping you look at those areas that what can be modified during an emergency. So that being said, has anybody started to modify? Do you have any type of waivers, templates, authorities in place that allow you to accelerate some of your processes in an emergency? Good. So then you'll be able to walk away, hopefully, with something. So NACHO kind of looked at all those challenges, and we started looking at four different areas of those. So administrative preparedness authorities, procurement, workforce, and reporting. So all four of those reports are available in the back. They're also available on our website. Our ASTO, part of the working group, also looked at the topic of administrative preparedness allocation. So if that's a topic of interest, that's available on their website, astro.org. All right. So I do want to start by saying for all four reports, I'm going to go through all four of them quickly. It's going to be a crash course in it, but I do want to frame it by saying I don't necessarily think that anything I'm going to give you today is really innovative or new, but I think what's unique about this is that it's all packaged in one place. You can take these checklists, these steps that are right here in these reports and bring them to your partners to start the conversation to really see what you can do. You need to have the conversation now because when you're in an emergency, it's going to be too late to put some of these in place. So the first thing we looked at was authorities, and this report really goes over a lot of those broad emergency declaration authorities you'll have. So the president's ability to declare a public health emergency under the Public Health Services Act, the HHS secretary has the ability to declare a public health emergency, and then various state and local jurisdictions have their own ability to declare certain types of emergencies and what powers that allows them or alleviate some of their requirements under that. So this report has five steps to kind of help you really assess where you are with your authorities. What authorities do you have in place? What authorities would be helpful? This is an opportunity for you to take this and sit down. This one's most appropriate for your governor, for your health officer. You know, sit down with them, have the conversations. There may be authorities you're not aware that exist, and what is the process to use them. So really just start having that conversation. Additionally, what this report has is an appendix on the last couple of pages of different authorities that certain jurisdictions have in place already so that you can potentially model if that's something that you would like to implement in your jurisdiction. That's some, we provided the references and citations so you're able to reference that and potentially implement that in your jurisdiction. So I was going to go fast. So next is procurement. So this report really looks at some of the common procurement vehicles that are available for, I would say health departments, but really it's any type of agency, whether it's cooperative purchasing agreements, mutual aid agreements, term contracts, emergency provisions under some of your procurement regulations. So this report walks through that. For example, there are the Twin Cities has, I see Gretchen is from Minnesota, so the Twin Cities has a mutual aid agreement with 17 different signatory parties that allows them to exchange personnel, resources, and equipment during emergency. And that includes the University of Minnesota, so it's not just a health department. So there's examples scattered throughout the report that you can look at and see if that's something that you'd be interested in. What's unique about this report is that it has a checklist. So it's really appropriate for you to sit down and talk to your fiscal agent, a procurement officer, whatever their title may be in your agency. But they're prompt questions to help you kind of walk through assessing where you are with your procurement policies. I think what is helpful is that the exercise of going through this will not only help you improve your emergency procurement provisions, but like it will probably help you improve some of the day-to-day procurement things. It'll also put you on the same page with that procurement official, helping understand expectations, and really just build that relationship. So, procurement. Workforce. So, we all know that the public health workforce is rapidly aging. According to the 2010 NATRO profile, so it's a little outdated. I'm not sure of the exact date, but any day the new NATRO profile will be coming out, I believe, at least after the new year. But according to the 2010 profile, only a third of LHDs have fewer than, or a third of LHDs have fewer than 10 FTEs, and 15% of them have fewer than 5 FTEs. So you can see quickly how during an emergency, your health department may become quickly overwhelmed with not having enough staff. Additionally, when we were developing these reports, we did a small non-representative sample of some of our NATRO members, and we found that 64% of them said that even if funds were available in an emergency, there would be other barriers that they would prevent them from actually hiring additional staff. And some of those things are listed in the report, and it's things like appropriate size and skill of the workforce. So public health professionals come with unique skills and training that is not necessarily easily replaced by volunteers or through a temp agency, such as a public health lab technician or a public health nurse. Additionally, governmental employment systems. So even if I have the money, it takes me 2 months to go through my hiring process. And then workforce protection. So are the folks that you're relying on, are they going to be there during an emergency? A lot of folks, members that we've heard of, are, you know, haven't fully educated their staff on some of the liabilities that come. So some folks are really hesitant to even serve during an emergency. So really having that education and making sure that they're aware that they'll be provided PPE, those types of educations, you want to make sure you have the folks during the emergency. So similar to the procurement report, this one also has a checklist that you can take. And it's most appropriate, this one, it's workforce, so to have that conversation with your human resource professionals and just talk to them, help assess where are your staffing, what relationships can you leverage? Can you leverage your university? Can you leverage the MRC network? Can you leverage different things that will actually fill those gaps? And do they have the type of skills that you're looking for? All right. The last one that we looked at area is reporting. So reporting was probably the most challenging to develop on our behalf. And really it's because reporting varies drastically across the U.S., where depending on what type of the emergency is or what the organization is and who's asking, when, and for what, it just was hard. But nonetheless, those common reporting issues are in the report, so you'll probably be familiar and can relate to some of those. And they're really duplicate and inconsistent nature of reporting. So some health departments were inputting information into their into the emergency management system, and then also implementing similar information back to their state health department. So really, a duplicating effort there. Difficulty of anticipating reporting needs for all hazards. So the reporting requests that you're anticipating for a pandemic are probably not going to be the same they are for a tornado or a flood in your jurisdiction. Additionally, differing perspectives on the timeliness and utility. So how that data can be used. You know, can you use the same information for the governor's request as you can that you're sending back to your state health department. So a lot of that varies depending on the person dealing with it. And where the requests come to, because it may come, if you have an incident command center, it may come to your incident commander, it may come to your preparedness director. It really varies. So this report, there are some items, there are some practices that we say are associated with helping to streamline some of the reporting requirements. And there are five of them that we have listed in the report, but a couple that I'll just call out are using a common centralized reporting platform. An example I used with sending information back to your EOC and to your state health department, have a conversation with these folks. See if there is, see what resources, financial resources you all have to hopefully, potentially use something like Web EOC. It's expensive and not all health departments, especially smaller ones, have that support. But, have the conversation, see where it can come, because if you can be all on one central reporting platform, then you're helping each other and not duplicating those efforts. Minimize the reporting burden. And that kind of overlaps a little bit, but it's really seeing where you can combine those reports. Use the same information that you're sending to your local board of health for your media request, those types of things. We saw a lot of, when we talked to a lot of our members, they were, drafting individual reports for each of the different folks that came in. And some people wanted it weekly, some people wanted it daily, some people just wanted it monthly. And really, a lot of that could be combined. And then web-based technology. If you're not already using something that's on the web, you should think about it. A lot of folks are still using Excel. Well, Excel's great. It has a lot of functionality, but you can't access that from just anywhere. If you're at your state health department in their emergency operations center, if you're out in the field or you're in one of your counties, or if you're working from home or whatever it may be, you really want to be able to access that so everybody can quickly look in and have that timely, up-to-date information. Some folks were still using Excel sheets, but then they would print them and fax them to where they needed to be. And so, I think that, some of that just really we need to move forward so that really the time, staff time can be shortened. So really quick and dirty, I didn't have time to go through each of the different steps and strategies in the reports. I'm happy to take questions, but I just want you all to walk away with these three main points is, you're not going to be able to fix everything, all of your procurement workforce and authorities all in one day, but, take some of these checklists, take some of them, and just explore your current policies and procedures. Where are there gaps? Where can you find those areas for improvement? And most importantly, start the conversation. Administrative preparedness cannot be implemented in a vacuum. I cannot just take it on within my health department and say, I'm going to fix everything. I've got to engage my partners both within my agency and outside. So I think it's most important for you to just have those conversations and see where can we improve, because during an emergency, you're going to want to have those templates already drafted, those waivers already ready to go. Because otherwise it'll just be too late. Some health departments really, at the end of H1N1, if you have a specific end, had a lot of funds that they had to return back. So they had money that they had to give back because they weren't able to spend it. But they needed it, but because of the barriers, they just weren't able to spend those funds in a timely manner. So that is, here's my contact information. Feel free to ask me any questions at the end. Thank you.